What I'm going to be talking to you today is about, and that's what we've called our framework for managing business information in DSTAR. So it's the Business Information Management Framework. And Steve and Bedford will tell you that we didn't actually choose the name, and we don't necessarily like it, but it has stuck, and it's got a bit of traction now in our department. So people do, in meetings, talk about BIMF at various times, and it comes up in conversation. So if you ever hear that, that's what it is. It's the Business Information Management Framework. And I guess the idea of calling it business information is to go a bit beyond the concept of records, purely records, but it is primarily about records, a framework for records management, because most of the business information that we hold in our department is records. If you look at the definitions of records in the State Records Act, the story about BIMF is a story of these four sort of concepts and how they all relate to each other. So I'm going to be talking about each of these. The first one is processes, and processes are really just a view of what your department or agency does, what its business, how it does its business. Now, I guess generally in records management, we're more familiar with the function and activity sort of view of the business. So on the left there, we have this sort of top-down hierarchical view of business by functions and activities. That's enshrined in the records management standards. What we're focused on here is the process view, which is more of the sort of horizontal, the sequential analysis. And I think, I can't remember the exact title of that work process standard as well, describe the two different views of the business. And the Australian standard does as well. So there's the function and activity approach and the process approach, and we've really focused more on the process approach. And when we talk about processes, we're talking about end-to-end processes as well. So there are different views of what a process is, but how we've conceptualized it is an end-to-end process between a client and some sort of department or group. So our definition, our working definition for a process was a set of activities resulting in a discrete product or service meaningful to an external or internal client. So you could see that there was like there's some sort of trigger for starting the process. So a client requests a service. A home builder submits an application for a building license. There's some sort of trigger that starts it. There's a whole lot of stages that happen. So there might just be one stage of activity that happens, and then there's something delivered at the end. So somebody gets a license, a school is built, an employer is investigated under the New South Wales Industrial Relations Laws. So these are the sorts of end-to-end processes that we have looked at. Now, how did we define our processes? Well, we actually got Record Keeping Innovations, something many people would know, Barbara Reed and Kerry Gordon and their team. They came in and did a traditional functional activity analysis, although I must note that their activities were sort of sequential in some way. So they analysed the functions and activities of the department, and then Stephen Bedford and I went through that analysis and pulled out what we thought were the processes according to this criteria, and we came up with a process register for the department. And it had about 200 processes in it. So we've got a process register, and if you looked at our process register, you would see some interesting things about it. First of all, the processes can vary in scale incredibly, from leave applications being a process where a staff member applies to their manager for leave, through to managing a construction project. Because using the definition, if the Department of Education asks Public Works to manage the building of a school, then the process isn't finished until the school is delivered back to the Department of Education. So we saw that as a whole process. Now, obviously when you get processes of that scale, you might also have sub-processes. So, for example, the Government Architect's Office will do some architectural design. That's a sub-process within that broader process. So you'll see those in our register of processes. Processes can be for external or internal. So the leave application is obviously an internal process that happens from staff to manager, or they can be external. But the point is that there's usually a client at the end of that. And processes became important, I think, since about the early 90s, you'll see the whole called process re-engineering, and you hear of process organizations. And often people focus on processes because it is client-facing. They're client-facing. So you're always thinking about what does the client want at the end of the process. Processes can also run in parallel. So with our construction project, there might be a ministerial inquiry come in relating to that. So there's a ministerial process that might start with a letter to the minister, or the minister asking a question that comes into the department. There's a whole lot of work done to create a response, and a response is provided. That might be about the same building project, but it's different to the process that's actually the process of managing the construction of that project. So we've got this process register. The other point is that with the processes that we've got, both the routine standard processes that might happen hundreds or thousands of times, but we've also tried to capture as processes things that are more unstructured, ad hoc, irregular. So we've actually defined things like policy development as a process, advice as a process, research as a process, things that you might not think of in that sort of transactional way of, you know, processing applications for building licenses, which is, you know, there's a clear process there. But we've tried to really define almost everything that the department does as a process. We're aiming for 90%. We might, you know, the other 10%, look, who cares? We're aiming to cover 90% of the department's work. And if we've done that, and if we've captured most of the really important stuff the department does, we'll be happy. Just quickly also, with processes, you define the process. You don't go out and find the process. You actually define the process. So we've actually defined what we think the process is. So it's not something that exists that you go out and discover. You actually define it by naming it, by scoping it, by saying what's in and what's out of the process. So every time the process happens, we see that as a case. And I guess this is a bit of my language, but I'm seeing every instant that that process happens as a case. So every time there's a construction project, so every different school, hospital, dam is a case. Every time there's a recruitment action for a particular position, that's a case. Every leave application is a case. Every time a piece of advice is provided, that's a case. Every policy that's developed, that's a case. So every instance of each process is a case of that process. So it's a pretty important concept in our system. And each case, so that's one case. This is my attempt at trying to represent multiple cases. My PowerPoint skills could be improved. But just to give you the sense that there could be a lot of different cases of a particular process. So, a complaint. There might be 20,000 complaints in the last year. Each one of those is a case of the complaint process. Now I want to talk about files. And hopefully you know something about files and filing. We've taken a little bit of a different view of filing and files, and it has caused me a bit of problem when I've been trying to communicate this in the department, so I probably might need to think up a different word for it. But basically, kind of aligns to this definition from the Shorter Oxford English Dictionary on Historical Principles. This is the definition of a file, which I quite like. Two definitions, actually. The thread, course, or tenor of a story, and a string, wire, or other contrivance on which papers are placed for preservation reference. They actually draw together a couple of key things about how I see a file. And it's actually, the file is the thread that links all of the information, records, documents, data relating to a particular case of a process, regardless of where that is held. So in a recruitment process, when in a particular recruitment process, there might be information in emails, on the network, in your SAP system, in your e-recruitment system, in official files, but all of the documentation relating to that one instance of the process is tied together by this thread, and that's what I see as the file. So it's more than just a few papers in a cardboard folder or a few documents in a virtual folder in an EDRMS. It can be information sitting in multiple systems, multiple places, but they all relate back to that one instant of that process. And I think I had a go at trying to represent that visually. The purchasing process is another one. So when you purchase goods and services, now I've defined purchasing as an end-to-end process, and enough, the accounts people also do that. Procure to pay, it's called. Starts when you decide you need to buy something, and it ends when the supplier gets paid. It is not just the bit where, you know, the invoice comes in and gets processed. It's the whole thing, from when the quotes are obtained, which might be sitting on someone's desk in a manila folder, or they might have been put into a file, but other parts of that trail of that process are sitting in the SAP system. So the requisition and the approval of the requisition in our organisation, they sit in the SAP system and the purchase order. And then the invoice comes in and that gets held in accounts. But all of that, if I'm purchasing a flatbed scanner to scan drawings, all of the information relating to that is one case. It's one file. So it's a case file kind of concept, but not like personnel files are all of the information about me as an employee of this department. Because that's my personnel file is actually multiple processes all documented on one case file. It's a slightly different view of a case file, so hopefully you'll get that. And the case is actually, you know, my leave application, my recruitment, not everything about me. So one of the things that we did in our have been doing is actually defining for each process what is the information we would expect to see. So whether it's data in a business system, whether it's documents, whether it's whatever it is, we can actually start to define that. Because we've defined the process, we can actually start to define all the information that you would expect to see in every instance of that process. And this is, and I have to give credit again to Stephen Bedford. I mean, it was his, the whole, you know, thing was his brainchild, although I've adapted it somewhat. But the thing I like to do is, the test is the annual report test. And I don't know whether, Stephen, you've actually written about this. But I've got here a copy of our annual report. It's actually a few years old now. It says that for fair trading, more than 34,000 disputes between consumers and traders were handled. I should be able to find 34,000 case files, one relating to each dispute, and that might be in the record system, it might be in the business system that they use, it might be on the network. It could be in all of those places, but I should expect to find those 34,000 dispute cases. And for each of those dispute cases, I should expect to find certain documentation for each of those cases. Now, there'll obviously be variations with all of this, but if we can define what we think of the sort of standard documents or data that we would expect to find for that case, then we've gone a long way there, and then we can start looking at some of the variations that you might have depending on, you know, different types of disputes, for example. So you can go through your annual report, and that's actually a way of testing whether you've defined your processes. You know, if I just open up to any page, you know, engineering undertook a major response and recovery deployment for the Newcastle and Central Coast storms and floods. Well, there's one process there. That's only just one. But there might be, what's another example? The other point is, you might have performance indicators around services. They can also be a place you could look for examples of the processes. So the number of expert design reviews undertaken for government agencies, there was 37. So we should be able to find 37 examples of that process having been represented in the information that they've collected in the department. The last concept is the naming. And this is how we're really tying it all together, is that we're using the names to link the information that's in the record system with the information in the business system, which the information in the network, with the information in the workflow, with the information in the manila folder. The idea is we establish a name for the case file, effectively. And we're using the process as the basis for the name. So that's our classification scheme. So for recruitment process, we might just call it the classification recruitment. Do we need to call it human resource management recruitment? Well, my view was, let's do the test. If you just have that single word, would you get confused about what that file's about? Would you think it's about establishing a contract or purchasing a flatbed scanner? Or would you understand by just knowing that it's recruitment, that it's actually part of the HR process and you know what to expect on that? So it was really trying to simplify back down to what's the bare essentials that will give you the context of the business process. Now, behind the scenes, we'll probably end up grouping things by functions, and but that might not be visible to the users, because one of the principles that we're strongly about is the user, making sure it's really simple for the user to understand and apply. Because there's 200 processes and therefore a couple of hundred classifications, we probably will group them in some way. So we probably will group all the HR type processes together. But effectively, that's sort of our classification. And then obviously you need the second part of the naming is the unique elements. So this is a recruitment case relating to the recruitment of a records manager. So whatever it might be, if it's construction projects, you need the name of the project. If it's purchasing, you need the name of the thing you're purchasing. So we specify what you should include in the second part of the name. So specify by the position description, you know, by the position, or specify by the building, or specify by the contract. And the idea is that this classification should be able to be implemented not just in your record system, but on your network, in your business system, in a workflow. Now, we haven't actually implemented it yet. So this was being developed for the rollout of an EDRMS initially. That's been delayed. So our initial aim was to get it into the EDRMS and extend it to the other systems. And we'll find that when we implement it, I'm sure that there'll be things we'll have to change relating to it. But the principle is come up with some names that can be used in any system where information and records are stored relating to that process. So hopefully this could be exist somewhere in the recruitment system, and the manila folder that someone's got on their desk, and the official file, and whatever else. Now, obviously if you recruited more than one records manager, you might need to distinguish between those case files. So there's the argument about whether you include a date or something, but as long as you've got the date elsewhere in other metadata, you shouldn't need to include it in the title. So as long as you can distinguish between the recruitment of the records manager in 2010 from the recruitment of the records manager in 2005, then, you know, that as long as that other information is available, then you can distinguish between those cases. So I'm not saying we would put everything relating to every recruitment of every record manager for this department in the one file. It's one for each thing. And the point is that don't be frightened of just having a file with two documents on it. Particularly in an electronic system, it really doesn't matter. In a paper system, it's a bit harder to justify the expense of a cardboard cover for one piece of paper. But when you're going electronic, it doesn't matter if there's only two documents in there. Having defined that for all of our processes, so the classification for all our processes, then what we do is hang off that access controls. So the access controls around who can access that information, both within the organisation and externally, and I'll come to what happened with GIPA in a moment. Security labels, so whether it's X in confidence or unclassified. We can hang off the retention and disposal actions relating to that particular process. We define record keeping procedures for that process. So to tell the people doing the work, when you're doing this process, these are the types of documents we would expect to find, and this is where we would expect to find them. And those procedures might either stand alone or they might be built into the business procedures around that process. So if there's a business procedure for recruitment or for construction project or for procure to pay, we can build the record keeping into those procedures that says, you know, make sure you create this document and capture it in there here, or make sure you use this template. So we can tie all of that to the classification. That's probably where I want to end, because it is time for morning tea. But just to mention, we did, when we were implementing GIPA in VSTAR, I was on the working party, the implementation working party, and the question came up about how are we going to decide on the access to information that we hold. And I presented this to all of the other, to all the divisions, saying, look, we've got this mapped out for you. We've got all of your processes identified. Maybe you can tie the GIPA access categories to this. And we found it didn't really work at this level, because often within that case file for a particular instance of a process, some of those documents might be released, some might not be. And so it ended up being that a lot of people were focusing down more at the individual document level rather than at the aggregation of the case file. So it was worth trying, but it didn't actually work for this particular purpose, but we think it can work for other access controls and security labels, setting at least a default access and security for all the documentation relating to that process, regardless of where it's held. So that's the other thing, it's applying the same security and controls, same retention controls, whatever those controls are, in all the different systems where that information lives, not just in your records management system. So it's an integrated sort of framework across all of our business information. That's probably it. Is there any questions? How do I turn this? Should I leave it on? Leave it on for the questions. Have I lost you? So the question is, will this process classification replace the keyword AAA classification? The answer is that we intend to. So we haven't actually done that yet, but what I did was I went through, we have actually looked at the types of information that are covered by keyword AAA and the GAs, the General Disposal Authorities as well, and we've actually got process classifications for all of those. Now, as I said, we might still have keyword AAA sitting behind it somewhere that mapped to it, or having the recruitment process might actually be linked into wherever it sits in keyword AAA. But the idea is that from a user's perspective, they might not see that. They'd probably just see recruitment. So they wouldn't see the whole string of personnel, whatever. But that might be behind the scenes. What I did was I actually went through the General Disposal Authorities and I looked at a particular process, and if you had all the documentation relating to that process, what would be the retention for that case file? And so I went through the whole of the General Authority 28, and mapped all that out. So I worked out, and there were only a few cases where you might have to distinguish between, you know, part of the file would be state archives and part would be destroy after 7 years or something like that. So we'll have to work out how we do that when we implement it. But generally I could find, following the process through, I could find an appropriate retention period and disposal action relating to that process. So it was just a mapping exercise. Yeah, that's been a bit of a challenge. I find that, all the way through this process, we've gone back to the business with the initial analysis the Record Keeping Innovation did with the classifications. It's very abstract for people to get their head around. Even though I was presenting to a division, maybe only 10 classifications for their whole division. And generally most people could sort of understand it, but there would still be debate around, you know, what did this actually cover and what did it mean? And it just meant that I think the way we communicated could have been improved. It's difficult. I think it's difficult because it is very abstract until they actually see it implemented in a system. Because they're doing it now. I mean, you can see, you know, they're naming things now, whether it's on the network or whether it's in the official files or whether it's in the business system. But they couldn't see how this connected to what they were doing now. So it's been fairly positive response. But as I said, we haven't actually implemented it yet, so that'll be the test, I think. But it is really trying to make it as simple as possible for the business, saying, this is what we understand. Actually, I should have said, one of the things we did do was map every process to the business unit. That's really critical. So you know who you've got to go and talk to, who owns that process, who can control the documentation relating to that process, who are the clients of that process. We've got all that mapped in our process register. So you can actually go to the business and say, these are the ones we think relate to you. Can you confirm that? I think what we're finding, the way it's being actually implemented, is that when there's a particular process being looked at, that's where we come in. So e-recruitment is obviously a big issue for us at the moment. We can go to them with our recruitment classification, say, here's our recruitment classification, here's all the controls relating to recruitment, here's the access that should be there for recruitment, here's the security label, here's the list of documents that should be and data that should be captured. Here's the retention and disposal authority that applies to recruitment. So we've all tied everything to the process. The exciting thing for me is that if I can do that here, then wouldn't that be similar to your organisation? So we're all part of the New South Wales government. We all have comply with the same government requirement in a lot of cases. There's some exceptions. But if we could define the record-keeping controls around recruitment for one department, couldn't we define it for the whole of the government? So it's a different view. So at the moment you've got Kiwi AAA tells you this is the classification. GA28 tells you this is the retention. But what we're doing is cutting it across this way by the process and saying, well, for the recruitment process, here's the access, here's the security, here's the retention, here's what needs to be captured as part of that process, and so forth. So it's just a different way of viewing it.
Should it be stopped?
Yes, sorry. I could go on for it. But if you've got any questions about it and you want to see some of our documentation, I'm sure myself or Stephen Bedford would be happy to talk to you either now or later. So thank you very much.